the wand, a puff of smoke, and the magic man pulls one out of the hat.
I still can't believe it happened.
Welcome to the Mirror's Magic Supercoach podcast following round 15. The buys are over. Got us to talk through those. Tommy, you had a good buy period by the looks of things.
Yeah, things went pretty well. I think wasn't looking great after the first few, but I think a lot of what I did in terms of my planning was really trying to address that last one and make sure I had 18, which I ended up getting. Barely one of those scores was Marika's 16, but apart from that, I did pretty well in that last round. So got me up, what did I score? 21.36, and that got me 465 places up. So 600th, which pretty happy with coming out of the buys, basically half that rank. Did it all in the last one, but the first one's just kept me going through. How about you?
Mate, 21.40 with a Marek in there. It's pretty impressive. So I also had the 18 and had Marek and then had the extra trade up my sleeve. I just couldn't stand looking at that 16. So I made a last-minute trade to, which was a premium out, to just get the extra number so I didn't have to take Marek. So traded Connor Rosie to Noah Anderson, which I think netted me 90-odd points or 80-odd points to get me a 21.20, which put me up the rankings, up 145 spots to 228. I think I started the buys around the 1,200 mark. So I had a good buy period. And the most recent week was, boosted by a bit of I caught a bit cheating by doing that little sideways trade of a premium. But what I was weighing up and for learnings and what to do, because my big preaching is don't worry too much about 1 week. It's about how many trades you got left for the rest of the year. And if you have to wear a donut, that 100 points is going to get eaten up pretty quick. We saw it with George Hewitt at the back end of last year. Coaches were costing 300 points for the back end. Making sure you're not just ruining your team just for those numbers. But I think both Rosie and Noah Anderson will go about that 105 mark for the rest of the year. So by having one extra game from Noah Anderson, barring injury, gets me an extra 95 points. Oh, sorry, 90-odd points after the Marek 16 over the top. With 9 weeks to go, that's about 10 points per week. So it's almost like making a little miniature upgrade, 10 points per week, which hopefully will hold me in good stead come the end of the year. But I've only got four trades left heading into this week. Now, how many trades have you got left?
Five. Coming into this round. So I did the two last week. The three. So it was out Steele, out Briggs, out Phillips, in Petrarca, Darcy Cameron and Marek. So obviously got off the Steele. He come out without strapping on his man. I thought he's gonna turn things around, and he did. He played a pretty good game, but I still think in terms of bringing in Petrarca, I had the money to spend there. It's an upgrade that I probably would have wanted to do on the back end anyway. I do hope for all the owners still turns it around, but I guess I had that luxury of moving off and removing all the chances of risk that he doesn't turn it around or he's dropped or it's a laid out. So I'm still happy with where that sits and want a more upgrade to go with five left.
Yeah, so my trades in the end were Wardlaw and Eddie Ford to Marek and Darcy Cameron, who looked good. I held Steele, and I've got bullish hopes, but I don't have bullish hopes it's going to be a top eight mids. If you had the extra trade to be able to do that plus the cash, then I think those coach will be in good stead. But also think those Steele owners will hopefully get hundreds from the way home, which obviously isn't what we wanted when we bought into him, but I don't think we're going to see those 60s. We saw he did look much better, tackled well, spread well in the easy matchup this week. I've also got the one upgrade to make, and that will be needing two trades to get me my full team of primos with two to go for the rest of the season. So I know a lot of coaches in the same boat, one upgrade remaining, one or two, and minimal trades left. So a lot of today will be talking about targets across each line and who that last upgrade will be. I think most coaches are looking at a midfield upgrade, so we're going to go through how we rank the top eight mids at the moment, defenders, rucks and forwards for those who need to make an upgrade elsewhere, and then just different scenarios, because whether you have minimal trades, do you take a haircut, do you do a bit of looping and hold those trades in, or do you be aggressive, make the trades? If you've got a lot of extra trades, you hold off doing the upgrade, wait for someone like a Sicily or an Oliver to come back to try to make the extra points on those coaches who won't have the trades to do that. So to kick things off, Tommy, let's run through how we see the best 22 scorers from now till the end of the year total points being. Oh, actually, make it average points. We can include your Sicily and Olivers, and then that can weigh up that discussion about how many trades you got left. So in defence, how do you currently rank the top six?
I think if I, between now and the end of the year, in terms of average, because I think you've got to put Sicily in there, if you've got decent coverage, I think personally is worth waiting for. If you've got a decent player in defence that can give you a 90 plus. So Dacos and Dawson, I think they're probably the clear one and two. They're definitely the ones that you'd want in your side. I think Sicily definitely rounds out that top three, but obviously Sicily is going to miss a couple more. Stewart, Sinclair, and then I think I'd give that last spot to it's really tough to split Caleb Daniel and Houston. I think they're both going to be inconsistent, but I do think probably Caleb Daniel, I think given what his role is, I think he's probably going to be in there, and I wouldn't mind jumping on him, especially as a pod on the run home. I think the one that's probably just falling out of my top six is Doherty. He just hasn't shown the ceiling, but I think buying into him at his price, you're pretty safe in what you're going to get, which is probably about 100 odd on the way on, in the back end of the year.
Yeah, Caleb Daniel's crazy unique. I think when he started getting good, it's when coaches realised they were so short-handed on that buy that they couldn't afford to trade him in. So, yeah, 0% of the top 1,000, 0 of the top 100. And Doherty, equal unique, like he's owned, but 6% of the top 1,000 is pretty low considering how dominant he's been over the years. But you're right, the top three, clear top three, are Dacos, Dawson and Sicily. Sicily, since he's had that role change, I think he's averaged 147 up until his most recent suspension. So there's a bit of a gap from there. I think Tommy Stewart will come home stronger than he had the first half, knowing he's got a fair few games at home, GHBA. Sinclair I also really like. We've liked him for a while now. I think you're now finally can say you're glad you made the Sinclair call over Sicily a few weeks back after Sicily
got the one
in your head. And what impressed me the most about him is that I thought he only scores well at half back, where he gets more intercepts, more efficient possessions and meters gained. But he played midfield, pure midfield role, and was great as well. So I think with confidence, you know, they're going to be the top five. But looking at the gap between the top three and the rest, the confidence you've got them. If Sicily can come out and do 120s from here, which is what Dacos and Dawson have been doing, and you're taking a haircut on a Houston or even a Daniel if they go 105, those 15 points per week can be really, really critical. So the question is, if you're running and you've got trades up your sleeve, a Sheasel still at D6, and you want to make an upgrade, would you make that upgrade this week to someone like a Luke Ryan, who up until last week was looking like he was down in form, but I don't trust him enough because I think he's going to play more of a defensive role. But do you do the upgrade to someone like a Daniel Houston, or do you wait 3 weeks, do a bit of looping with a Sheasel, and then look to get in a Sicily late, knowing that he's going to be very lowly owned around those top-ranked coaches? I think 6% of the top 100, 8% of the top 1,000, and I doubt many people are going to have trades up their sleeve in a couple of weeks' time when Sicily returns. Is it worth the wait to get Sicily in?
So Sicily's, I might be wrong, Sicily's back in round 18 versus North, is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it depends on who's sitting there as the cover. So I know a lot of people are sort of working at that D7, F7 swinger, might be a Himmelberg that will get that DPP flexibility with a Sicily, a Sheasel. But if you've got someone there that you're pretty confident is going to pump out an 85, could have a higher ceiling game and really push that score along until Sicily comes back, I think, yeah, you can wait on him. And I think it might be worth doing, especially if he's going to come out and put up 125 plus. And we've sort of seen on the weekend when Will Day went back there, out of the CBA, that the ball's just down there so much that he's going to get so many opportunities. He's playing loose. He's just going to score so well, and that could be the point of difference. I think, so if you've got someone down there that you're going to hopefully push out to a loop or upgrade later, you're happy with their score, I think he's worth waiting for. If you don't have any of the other sort of big fives, Sinclair, Stewart, Dawson, Dacos, but if you don't have someone, you're going to be playing a rookie, a Weddle, I think you just get the best available that you can afford right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. It was more if you have a Will Day who you might have earmarked to upgrade after this buy round period, but then they're the ones you can, I think, hold on, particularly with that big score, and who knows what he can do with that role. We had a few other names who have kind of been knocking on the door the last 3-5 weeks, a Jordan Ridley, a Bailey Dale. I know it sounds like Ed Richards is going to return pretty soon, and it was since Ed Richards had been down is when, and Johannesson is when, we started seeing Bailey hit his straps. I don't think he's going to be top six. Ridley's been getting it done and looks great, so he might be knocking on the door, but I've got a lot more confidence in those, yeah, as you said, those big five defenders. If I was them, where it gets trickiest though, looking at trying to rank them all, is the midfield, because I know it's where a lot of coaches are trying to make the upgrade this week. A lot of earmark getting Clayton Oliver, and me in particular earmarking in Clayton Oliver this week. He's now gone for 1-2, but I don't feel like you can be running a rookie for one extra week. You might as well, like, bit like the Rosie to Anderson call, if you take a rookie who might get a 40 points instead of getting the 110-point premium midfielder, that difference is, say, 10 points per game on the way home, which is what Oliver might do. So it's not worth that risk, I don't think, waiting for a Clary if you have the rookie there. How do you currently rank the top eight?
I think Bond has definitely earned the title of being number one. I think Clary is obviously going to miss this weekend, maybe miss next weekend. So, like, he's not worth waiting for. Like, if he's still having hamstring complications, it sort of indicates that there's something much more deeper. He played out that game. That was, what, 5 weeks ago. I think the risk that he presents is too much. So I, in the Sicily conversation, I wouldn't be waiting for a Clary. I'd just be doing the upgrade. So I'd go Bont, Laird. Then it's really hard. I think there's probably maybe Petrarca, and then a bit of a gap where you could sort of couple a fair few players. You've got Merritt. I think Butters, if you're not an owner and you're full in the forward line, is a really good option. I think Josh Kelly, I would have in there as a top eight averager between now at the end of the season, but I don't think I would buy into him. I wouldn't personally, based on injury risk, but I think scoring ability is as good as anyone. And then it's really difficult. I think Brayshaw will probably pepper that number. That sort of 112, 113 number. And there's probably a lot around there. I think Neil as well. So in terms of ranking them, I probably feel like there's like three elite players. That'll be Bont, Petrarca, Laird. And then I think there's another handful of players that you could probably buy into with confidence. That'd be a Neil, a Merritt, a Kelly minus injury risk, a Libba, a Petrarca.
Yeah, I think you're right. Then you throw in, and this is the difference, as you said, why you do wait. Why you, there's potential and temptation to wait for Sisley, whereas you look at the midfield, like even a Darcy Parrish, a Tom Green, a Nora Anderson, who's to say they're not going to go 110 to finish the year and only be a couple of points below the other ones as well. So there are a lot of options. For, I don't know what it is, but Libba, despite the fact he's averaged 118 for the year, does it all, gets contested possessions, tackles well, never gets tagged, looks like he's locked in on that role, even though they've chopped and changed McRae, a Baz Smith, a Treloar through the midfield. His role stayed consistent. Don't know why, I just don't. And he seems to be the topic of one. Those who already own a Petrarca, Laird, Bont, and are looking for an upgrade. Libba seems to be a toss of the coin between him and a Zach Merritt. For some reason, I keep going back to Zach Merritt because he's done it for more years in a row. So you're pretty confident Libba's going to keep this up?
I think so. You look at what he's done on the year. He's only got two scores below 100. One's an 80, one's an 87, and then there's some really high-ceiling games in there. I think we've probably seen over the last few years he's got the safest role in that midfield. Bont's gone forward, McRae's gone out, Bad Smith's come in and out, Treloar goes in and out. Obviously, Dunkley's gone. I think he's been the one consistent over the last few years. So I think there's a fair few players I'd put ahead of him, and I think that might be just because he's not the flashiest looking player. But at the same time, if you've already got a few of those, Petrarca, and Neil, and Merritt, which I would put ahead of him, a Bont and a Laird, I think he's probably the next best option. He's probably who I'm looking at this week too.
What about a Sam Walsh?
No, not for me. I think he's a better player. He's a better footballer for sure. But in that team with that role, I think he's potentially buying into 105 average, 110 at the top, where Libba's sort of 115 at the low end, I think.
Yeah, I was surprised to see that Walsh has gone 117 before a couple of years ago. But, yeah, I'm with you now. That was when he had CBAs of 67% and was playing a lot more inside. Last year, I think he averaged 35% contested compared to you want your 48%, high 40s percent contested. He doesn't tackle enough, so he doesn't get those easy points. He's going to need 40 possessions to put up a score. You want those players with that better role.
Yeah, 107 is his second highest score of the year so far. He's played a fair chunk of it at this point. So, yeah, I think if he's the best you can get, you don't have the cash. I wouldn't be too mad buying into him and hoping that something changes at Carlton and he gets a better role. But without the role change, he's not a top 8 mid. He's not even a top probably 15 or 20 mid.
Yeah, he is a cheap one. There are a few decent cheap options. As you mentioned Brayshaw, I think Parrish is also good for his price. Mind you, I'm not sure if you saw some of the clips, but when they got smashed in the midfield, the stoppages, Essendon, he seemed to be the one who it was his man getting every clearance. So I'm not sure how they're going to work. I've mentioned before, I think Essendon look best when they've got those more hard-working Caldwell and even a Hobbs going through there than having both Parrish and Merritt in there. So my top eight... I'm with you, Bont, Laird, Oliver, who I really wanted to get this week, but I'm just happy to forgo him now. Petrarca, who for some reason I still don't trust as much as others in that top echelon, but he's probably the one I'm going to be targeting to get in this week. Neil, Merritt, Libba Sarong, I think I am. And I just, as I said, I don't know what it is about Libba. It's hard for me to really commit. Zach Butters, I agree. He's got that scoring power. We've seen it even in past years when he just showed flashes and everyone thinks he's having a breakout year. This year, there's periods where he was scoring 170 in Supercoach. So he's got the game. I just feel like he might get a bit more attention back half the year. It's going to be very hard for him to sustain a 110 average. But
let's I was just going to say, I think in terms of the mids, especially early, it seemed like there was a bit of a trend where a lot of the highly owned players and the really expensive midfielders weren't scoring too well. I was just having a look now. So we've got 9 players that are averaging over 115 on the year, but it's something like 17 that are averaging over 115 over the last 5 weeks. So there's definitely been an uptick. I think during the middle part of the year, the game slows down, people get tired, there's more stoppages, which obviously helps mids. I'm sure there's a hell of a lot more to it than that, but the numbers that we're getting from the mids lately are a lot bigger than they were earlier in the year as well. So I think picking up some of those value options is a really good play, whether it is a Parrish or a Walsh, because there's probably points on offer and a few of them are probably going to be underpriced based on what they can perform at.
Yeah, you're right. Like Parrish has missed that big chunk where we've seen that swing where the midfielders are getting their big scores. We know he's got that game to score well. Ruck Lyon, I think the coaches who might want to do an upgrade or considering an upgrade are those with a Briggs at R2 or even a Briggs at R3, and the choice is do you now trade out Marshall or Briggs? Firstly on that, if you had both still, I know you traded Briggs out last week, but would you rather hold Briggs or Marshall the rest of the year?
Marshall, I think. I think the same thing as last week. I don't know, I played this game pretty conservatively, and I think going with Briggs for the rest of the year, you're kind of confident that he's going to be a top four ruckman in the competition in really his first year of having a crack at it. Is he having a purple patch? that's going to slow down? Are Ruckman going to see enough tape on him to know, you know, how to beat him at the stoppage and push him out of, at a off balance? Or is he going to continue continue scoring those goals in meaningful periods of the game and doing the follow-up work? So I personally think that, you know, is really a rookie ruckman having his first crack at solo going to be a top three ruck in the league, or do you stick with the known tried and true Marshall? I think I'd rather get hurt by probably the unlikely situation of Briggs being a top three ruck rather than trading out and watching Rowan Marshall put up some big scores and Briggs come back to the mean.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. Hopefully for Briggs owners, he does continue it, and even for the comp to have another elite ruck. But what he's gone at 116, like you, Oscar McInerney going at 95, Riley O'Brien 95, Blitzars 95. These are good ruckmen. Gorn Grundy going 92 apiece. Do you think he's actually going to sustain that one? Well, it's 116, and I don't think that's sustainable. But even is a 105 sustainable? I think he might be more that 95 mark. You see, you're still your top tier ruckman scoring, but just not your elite super coaches. And he'll come
Some pretty rough matchups coming up too, with Melbourne this week, Reeves at Hawthorn the week after, who dominates hit-outs, Riley O, who's really restrictive, and then Witts the week after, and English after that. So that's a real tough matchup run. We will certainly know what he's made of over the next 3 or 4 weeks.
If you were just wanting to jump off now then, or even in the future, back end of the year, English number one, who do you currently see the second best ruckman in Supercoach, knowing Witts has been having a great season but had a down one last week. Nankervis has been getting it done, but it's been first year for a while. He's been really relevant. Marshall's the most highly owned one, but he's been great at really 109 average. You can't ask for much more. How do you currently see the second ruck going?
I think it's probably going to be Witts, just on a consistency basis. But I don't think there's a whole lot to split with and Marshall. They're the same price. I think you could jump in either. Marshall probably has the higher ceiling given what he can do around the ground. It depends on where your team's situated on if you want to take a risk. I think the ballsy play, which is obviously Sean Darcy, with that really high ceiling on the back end, really after next week, Briggs probably should be more expensive than Darcy. He's got a break even of 175, and Briggs, he's got a break even of 28. You wait 1 or 2 weeks and then see how Darcy's looking, and then jump on Darcy and hope he can produce some monster scores in the back half of the year as Freo sort of attack a hopeful final position. I think that's probably a play that I'd definitely look at if I was a Briggs R2 holder.
Yeah, I'm with you too. And particularly those ownerships, as much as Marshall does have that higher ceiling, we've seen at times where he has low kicking efficiency and not as much hit-outs to advantage as those other elite rucks, he can be prone to a pretty average score, knowing that he's got all top 10 have him, 94 of the top 100, 92% of the top 1,000 owner Marshall. If you do a, whether it's a Sean Darcy or a Witts and get that little difference, it could be a great way to come back at the pack. Forwards have been pretty blessed this year that we've got a crazy good top six forward line who are all going, you're almost expecting 105 plus from all of them. Obviously, Taranto and Dunkley are the top two. Who else do you see being top six forwards for those who are needing to do an upgrade this week?
Yeah, I think Butters is probably quite clearly a third. He's got really low ownership, which is pretty surprising too. So he's 19% of the whole competition, and in the 1%, he's right down. He's only in 28% of those teams, and considering what he's been doing over the last, little bit, really, ever since that week that you brought him in, he's been putting up monster numbers. It's quite remarkable that he's still really a relative pod. So I think he's quite clearly the third and probably the best target this week. I think McRae, based on a consistency basis, is pretty comfortable to put up like a 105 number. And I think that's the same for Errol Gould and Rosie, sort of to round out that top six. I think they're a little bit of ahead, and then maybe a Caleb Daniel is that next play as a pod. I think everyone else below that's probably going to hover around the 100 mark. So I think there's probably a 5-point difference between the top six as they stand right now and the rest, and I don't think it's all that controversial.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And Cogs, we spoke about him last week. He's just that kicking efficiency is going to reduce him from being that top echelon, and he is very popular amongst the rest. So if there is one, if you want to make a bit of a tactical move, I think Lots might have done last week knowing he was on the bye, but he'd be the one I'd be comfortable jumping off. Darcy Cameron, who's been had those slowly building into his game. I know a lot of his most popular trade in player last week. He scored 107 on return against Adelaide, not on return, but post bye. Is he someone you can see being 105? And if you didn't jump on last week, which part of the appeal last week was to help you with that bye structure, would you jump on him now?
I think he can for sure. Like he's underpriced and he's worth buying into because he gives you the cover in the ruck spot. I think that's worth taking a haircut of 5 points over some of the other players as a play. Obviously, one, the flexibility; two, he's underpriced; and three, he can produce that scoring. I don't think he is a 105 to 110 guy. I think he's probably going to more likely hover around that 100 mark unless we probably see Cox go out of that side for injury because he's playing really well. So, like, he's definitely someone that you can bring in. I could have afforded someone better, but I brought in Darcy Cameron based on the fact that he gives me flexibility. So I really do like him as an option. But if you've got cover there or you don't value the cover in that ruck spot from him, I think there are better options.
Yeah, no, 100% agree with that. Ben Keys is now, I think it's 5 weeks in a row where he's played pure midfield. And yes, he did tag Dacos at times. He also ran free as a midfielder. And I think a fair few big moment clearances and contested possessions late boosts his score up to a 119. So he's had a few big ones in a row, still cheap at 462K. I've mentioned before, I think if any other year where we didn't have a Dunkley, Taranto, Butters, Rosie, McRae all in the forward line, then I could really see myself taking that punt. But all those other names I can see definitely being main midfield men for the next 9 weeks of the year, but all it needs is just a flick back to Keys being back forward and you're going to get the scoring he showed at the start of the season. So that's my only concern with a Ben Keys in this limited trade format where if you get him in, you're probably going to be on your field for the rest of the year, even if there is that role change. Having said that, he did look great and was pretty impactful in there in those clearances. If you were short on getting those main guys at the top, would you still buy into him at that price?
So I wouldn't buy at him into him about 150K cheaper. So I definitely got that wrong. I think my concern was he wasn't going to play mid-minutes and definitely tag Dacos and maybe work out of that. But I think it's pretty obvious now that they value him in there. He's a better midfielder than he is a forward. Obviously, the kicking lets him down at times, but I guess the grunt work that he's given in the Crows in there is valuable. So I think he's worth, like, he's an okay buy at his price. He still presents with risk that he might go forward at times or he might do a tagging job. But I think if he's the best you can get up to and you already own a Darcy Cameron, happily bring him in. But I think Darcy Cameron's a better option at a similar price.
So as I mentioned before, where we're blessed with is that we've got all these midfielders playing which are forward eligible and we're getting these big scores from our forwards this year. I dare say I think it's 9 of the top 10 averaging forwards will probably drop out to be mid only come next year. But looking at last three averages and the CBAs amongst those, you've got your Dunkley who's 85%, Taranto 85%, your Keys, Butters, Rosie, all these players, but the one with 0% who keeps getting it done is Nick Martin. Crazy the year he's had, and one which I've certainly missed. I've always been, I'll need my super coach players to be inside mids, even if they've got forward status. That's where the points are to be done, but he just keeps getting it done. I personally feel like he's overscored so far this year, and I'd be very surprised to see if he can keep up that. He's gone 130s last three, but even 110 average 105 average for the second half of the year. But he is a very good footballer. It's just I wouldn't be buying it. I'd be getting more the proven types. Have you considered Nick Martin at all?
I haven't considered him. And I think at this price, he's way too expensive to bring in. But he's a bloody jet. I love watching him run around in the red and black. So clean, uses the ball really well, runs all day. Pretty hard for a player that's relatively slender. Can't believe he went undrafted a couple of times, but we're very fortunate that he's at the Dons. But I don't think, you don't buy wingers in this game. It's only his second year. He's definitely in a purple patch of form. But I think having him in there for the rest of the year probably is a bit too risky at that price too. Like there's better options there. They're a lot safer. But he's a bloody good footballer.
Bloody good footballer. I think his career best disposals in the Waffle was 24 possessions. I think he's averaging 27 at AFL level his last four. So he's a gun, but yeah, I'm with you with those wingmen. And that's also my concern on Josh Kelly. The big upside and the reason why I started the season with him was because it was earmarked to play inside mid. He's done that all year, and outside of his injury games, he's proven to be a top eight mid. His game, he returned from a hamstring against Frio. He played wing, and wings, they need the game on their terms, and he scored really well, and that's because they smashed Dockers by 80 points. But whether he keeps that wing role or if he goes back in the midfield is why I'm a little bit more cautious on him. But we've also seen some drops. The Noah Anderson dropped back. He's been playing a bit of wing time as well. So I think that's why it gets back to those top echelon guys, knowing you're guaranteed inside minutes, whether it is that Libba, Sarong, Zaki Merritt, where I rate them. But as always in the Trade Insights, we'll put in those best 22, how we both rate them, and hopefully you can target some of those guys for your future upgrades. If you're short on cash, and there is, we mentioned Jaxi, I know you just traded him out, but also a Callum Mills, who I think at the start of the season, it wouldn't be wrong to assume that both Asteel and Mills could be top eight midfielders. They now come in really, really cheap. Do you, a team low on cash, would you do that move to Asteel or a Mills to be an on-field player the rest of the season?
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't be bringing in Mills this week. He was subbed out on the weekend. You don't know what they're going to be doing in terms of managing his body. I think he's definitely, you know, a capable player. He was clear top eight mid last year. The role throughout the entire start of the year was not good in terms of he was going back, he was going forward, he was going on the outside, he was coming on the inside. He's way too flexible. He's missed a fix it, and that's not going to result in consistent scoring. So, you know, you can buy a whole bunch of players that are going to average 85 between now and the end of the year, which is kind of what he was doing. 95 to start of the year. You can buy a heap of midfielders in that price range that are going to score that. And ones that don't come with the same sort of injury risk. So I'd be waiting for Mills for probably 2 weeks before I bring him in, but definitely really good cover once he's fully depreciated. And Steele, I wouldn't be buying into Steele with his injury concerns. We've seen players that have injuries, like Steele 3 weeks ago, had a really good game after a couple where he was sore, and then he came out and was sore the following week. I don't know. I just feel like buying into those sorts of players is a bit risky as an on-field option.
Yeah, so that's the on-field, and you mentioned a couple of weeks, which definitely makes sense with Mills with a couple of small scores. He's got a lot of cash more to drop. This 23rd man concept, which I know a lot of the coaches around the top were doing it last year, and I dare say people have been doing it for years in Supercoach. I'm more new to it with this rolling lockout scheme, and that is to get a good player on your bench, and you can ideally swing them mid-forward, but you can loop, so whoever plays first, knowing there's a lot of non-playing players on players' coaches' benches, you might be able to get into Callum Mills in a couple of weeks, use a trade, but then put an emergency on him. If he scores a 105, you then might be able to bench a Tom Green and play that sort of card. Plus, there's cover if there's any injuries. What's your thoughts on getting that extra 23rd man, wasting a trade to get him in purely for cover and a bit of backup? Or do you think you're better off saving that trade to say if a Bontempelli were to go down, you can then trade him to an Oliver in 3 weeks' time rather than having to rely on knowing you've got a less trade because you've already used that trade for that 23rd man?
Yeah. If you've got four or less trades after you're fully upgraded, I don't think you worry about that swing, man. To be honest, a lot of the times, one, they don't get used. Two, they might score 103 and you're like, yeah, I've kind of got to do that and I'll bring off Tom Green in case he scores an 85. And Tom Green ends up going massive. So over the course of the year, every single time you loop, it's not going to work out or balance probabilities. It's not going to. So I think when you think about having that swing, as a loop player, it's very much a luxury and it's not going to work every single week or even be worth it every single week. And as a cover player, unless it's a late out, typically you would rather use, one of your injury trades to do a sideways. If it's Merritt goes down, you know, captain's run on a Saturday and he's got a Sunday games or something and he's going to miss two, you want to move him off rather than sitting five on the bench and cover in that spot, I think. And that's what the injury trades are for. So I think it's an awesome thing to have, but it's very much a luxury. And I think if you've got four or less trades, I wouldn't worry about trying to find that. I'd rather hold them to trade out those players, especially with rolling lockouts, to cover donuts that way and make sure you've got best 22 players.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. So in your two top 10 seasons, did you have a strong 23rd man, or you did just that, which is back in your 22 and save that trade that if there were to be someone, and I think there's someone was out in one of your years and everyone got a donut and you were able to trade out for a Tommy Hawkins late, I think it was.
Yeah, there was a couple actually. So in that second year that I came top 10, there was a few injuries late. Everyone had ran out of trades. And a few people had swings, but it didn't matter because they were the injuries came on different lines. I was really conservative with trades, and it's what got me into the top 10 that second year, the fact that I had trades to make sure that I didn't cop donuts or I wasn't taking a rookie score. I really do value having a best 22 player on field over having, you know, a five who might put up a 75, but a rookie might have put up a 60. That week, and you've only gave 15 points about doing that trade. Like, if you've got the trade there, definitely do it. But I would rather bank those trades and make sure that I'm going to have a top 22 throughout the back end of the year. Because if someone's only got two trades, they've used two of their last four to get, you know, a Fife or a Callum Mills, and they're putting up 85. They've cost themselves, you know, probably 25 points a game because you could have turned that Merritt into a top eight mid.
Yeah, that I think I'm with you because I was part of me was toying with doing something like that, taking a haircut rather than getting Petrarca. If I got a cheaper mid, it then would have given me the cash to then maybe do a Johnson and Mills next week. But what's the point in taking a haircut on the one who's going to be on my field just purely for that looping? And as you said, and anyone who's doing this vice captain loophole, like Murphy's Law is that if you almost don't want that decision, the 105, 106, we've had it all year, and who to choose, and typically the one you choose to field ends up scoring the least. So in terms of trades left, like we've both mentioned, you've got five, I've got four, I want to do two this week to get full Prima, which would leave me with two for the rest of the season, which I know is light on, but it's about what I had this time last year. Obviously the ideal number's five. I think looking more realistic, that number's going to be four or three, what most coaches are going to be rolling with for these injury trades. Do you hold off if you've got two or three trades left or going to be left with two or three trades left? Like me, say I've got four and I'm currently running a Humphrey or a Matt Johnson or a Jacob Van Rooyen, a rookie. I still want to get a full Prima before I start worrying about injury trades, don't I? There's no way I'd be like, oh, I'm going to save my trades for injuries. I'm going to keep rolling out a Matt Johnson each week as my M8. I'm better off using my trades now and get the most points, the most games with a full Primo side as possible and kind of make your own luck there.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Especially, like, I know in your situation, you've got a Fife there or a Humphrey. If you're not trading those players out to do the upgrade, like they're going to be valuable on the back end of the year. They're best 22 players. As long as they don't get injured, they're going to be there. I would rather, you know, create your own luck, I guess, in terms of bringing in the premiums and hoping you don't get those injuries rather than delaying it just in case you do. Because at the end of the day, you're going to have to use that injury trade anyways. And you've hamstrung yourself into playing a rookie for three games, and who knows, you might get another injury on the back end of that player you just brought in. You just play the cards as they are in front of you, I think, and you bring in the premiums and you upgrade your side and hope it lasts as long as possible.
Yeah, no, I think you've summed that up well. So long story short, most people are trying to get the upgrade they want. You should be aiming for who you think is going to be the best scorer from here to the end of the year. Value is less important. Obviously, you've got them for the rest of the season. If you've got a few extra trades up your sleeve, you might consider holding out for a Sicily or a Oliver later in the year, knowing that they could be the D1 and the M1, and they're going to be lowly owned around the top. But if you haven't got many trades, if you need to do your upgrade, just make that call now. If you haven't got the good cover, or if you're running a rookie, you're better off getting the player in now because you know they're guaranteed going to play, whereas who knows where Oliver's going to be. So with all that said, what are your final trades this week to get you to full primo?
Don't love it, but I've got to get rid of... I don't have to get rid of Weddle, but it allows me to get the best primo, so that means either Libra or Butters. So I'll be going Weddle to Ocean Mullen. Hopefully he comes in. If not, I don't have any cover in my defence, but... that allows me to get forward up to Libra or Butters. And I think grabbing not having cover in defense is rough, but I've got three injury trades there. So as long as it's not a laid out, I can do that sideways move. If it's Day or a Sheasel, that's fine. You know, I can move off them pretty comfortably. If it's Dawson, Stewart, Dacos, I'm pretty confident that I'll be able to get to another like top liner, whether that is a Caleb Dale or whoever's on a hunt runner form of Sicily. That's what the injury trades are for. So I'd rather grab that liver or Butters 115 plus guy rather than take a haircut and grab a 105, 108 one.
Yeah, like it. I have a midfield upgrade to make, so I'll be trading out Humphrey and... the other one, sorry, 2 sec. Bailey Humphrey and Jacob Van Rooyen for a throwaway rookie on the bench. It's going to be a Gilby, I think, who's got the defender mid-swing. I can use him for a bit of looping and move players around, and I'll get the Petrarca. I wanted Oliver. I've got enough for Oliver, but unfortunately it's ruled out. So get the upgrade as soon as I can, and that will then leave me with what I call complete team, because there's no rookies, but I don't have a Jack Sinclair, which I think is going to hurt me in the end, but I also have a Sheasel, Will Day, D6, D7, which can play a little bit of, hopefully between the two of them, they can edge out a score close enough to them. And by getting a Gilby, the GWS defender mid, if a Sheasel does do well, I can swing Day into midfield and loop again. So play that game, which I don't like doing, this sort of looping, second chances, bench, D8, D7, M8, M9s, but I'm going to be forced to do that and hold on to my trades. And as we said, in terms of using trades, definitely don't hold off doing a trade if it's a genuine upgrade. But I think I'd be silly to use those two trades to do a Ridley to a Sinclair or a Dale to Sinclair, knowing I'm better off saving that trade if there is an injury to a Bontempelli or a Dunkley that I can get the more guaranteed points from there. But I think that's everything for now, Tommy. I'll obviously go through more of that in the trade insights and the quickfire Q&A. But any last-minute parting messages from your end?
No, I think this is the relaxed part of Supercoach. You know, hopefully after this week, everyone's fully upgraded. You get to sit back, watch your team in full flight, not have to make any trades unless someone gets injured, and hope all that work and trading you've done for the first half of the year and all that stress pays off in the back end. And if you've traded well, you'll see your ranks start to climb up as others sort of who have taken haircuts come back to the pack. So yeah, fun time of year. Probably less stressful. You just got to get your captains right, and hope your weekend turns out all right.
Well, let's just finish on that then. Captains, who will you be running out, knowing you've got first time for 4 weeks, we've got all teams to play with?
Yeah, I think I'll probably go back to the well with Dunkley against Richmond. The fact that they don't tag means that I'm happy to go there, and I'd love to stick it back on Bont against Freo. So that's probably where I'm looking at this point, but geez, it's nice to have all the options.
Yeah, I think I'll be with you. I'd toy with a Laird against North, but I know that Liam Shields has been doing a few roles in the past, and he seems to be an okay matchup for him. And Bontempelli smashed Freo last time, which makes you think, well, Freo might have to shut him down this time, but they haven't played a tag all year. So you're probably on the money there, and I'll be doing something similar. But, yeah, thanks again for your time, Tommy. We'll touch base next week.
Pleasure. Cheers, mate.
All right, Tommy. Seems to happen every week. I forget to talk about something. I'm there cursing that Oliver's not playing and I can't trade him in this week as a trade-in, and that's got all disregard for anyone who's held him throughout those bye rounds, and he's been getting meant to be playing the week after week after week. It was currently listed as 1 to 2 weeks from now. You've held for this long. Do you rip the band-aid off knowing it could be 2 more weeks of you having to field a rookie and that money can get you any other premium, or you're in this deep now, he is unique, do you hold?
I think personally, if I was in that situation, you're in too deep. I would hold. I think if you held him through the buys and still fielded 18 because you'd done the buy planning, you've probably got that loop on the bench that's able to cover him, whether that is a Fife or someone else, that type of player that can put up a decent score in his absence. And he's going to be a massive point of difference on the way home. I think, you know, if they said 100% is 2 weeks, I think you'd probably have to trade. But the fact that he could be one, you'd be kicking yourself if you missed him for 5 weeks and then he came back and scored 140. So I think I'd lean towards holding. He's already hurt your season so much. I would want him to repay the faith. I don't think I could deal with watching him pump out 140s on the back end and you traded him with only 1 week left on the sidelines.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's hard to say, and I apologise to anyone who took my advice. And that was my advice last week, which is, hold for one more because he's going to be so unique. He's going to repay the faith. He's obviously missing one more, but he's going to be even more unique because I know a lot of coaches are looking to trade him out this week. So my view is to trade, but and with you again, if he comes back or he misses 3 more and then comes back poor, you can at least say, oh, well, Oliver ruined my season. But he'll ruin it more, I think, if you did trade out, then he comes out and puts up 140s and makes that back. Like any Jordan Ridley holders, owners for the start of the year would probably be thinking the same thing there, and I feel much better they've got him back in there. So that's it. Cheers, Tommy. We'll chat again. Magic.